This is our 15th show. My name is Bruce Birch, and this is All Things Reconsidered. And I'm very grateful to have been invited back into your living room or wherever you are listening to the radio tonight. This is our 15th show. We have hit another landmark here at All Things Reconsidered. 15 whole doggone shows. 10 shows that were kind of rocky, perhaps. I don't want to go too far with that. But just suffice it to say that I'm very grateful to have been to be able to share with you stuff that I've picked up along the way. Tonight's show, we have Samsara Taylor on our show tonight, and she is going to be talking with us about the World Can't Wait movement one more time. She is going to be talking about the events that happened on November the 2nd and also future World Can't Wait type of stuff. And I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag. I'm going to let her tell you. Just some other little housekeeping issues. Rama Bahama, Rama and Grace just gave a stellar premiere show for Homebodies, and you can reach that show at ramabahama.net. So check it out for next week if you're interested in listening to that program. Okay, so let's do this. Let's go ahead and bring up the announcements and get that out of the way. Again, my name is Bruce Birch, and welcome to All Things Reconsidered. Just want to let you know that here's some announcements. Listen to this. That's real radio, folks. Just want to let you know that. Okay, got paper. Got paper in my hand, and I'm going to be reading off of this little piece of paper. You should see how small this piece of paper is. It's pretty small. It's quite tiny. Just want to announce, first of all, if you'd like to visit us online, please do so at allthingsreconsidered.org. That's A-L-L, thingsreconsidered.org. You can go there and you can post in our forum. You can visit the chat room if you're so inclined. I think I'm the only one that ever goes there, actually. So, you know, but it's okay because when I'm talking on the radio, I'm actually talking to, you know. Anyway, also, I'd like to announce we are being archived by White Rose Society. Thank you so much, Ben Birch, for everything you do over there in helping Progressive Radio Archiving Service. Ben has been archiving our show for a little while, and we're going to be using one of his streams fairly soon. So, if you want to go over there and download some of our archives, please do so. You can also reach our archives at our website, ATR, which is allthingsreconsidered.org. Okay, those two announcements are out of the way now. Second or third announcement, I think. If you are interested in listening to Peter Werby tonight, who comes on every Sunday night, does a show called Night Call out of Detroit, Michigan. Stay on this stream, and I will broadcast him directly following this show. Peter Werby came on our show a few programs ago and did a wonderful interview with us. Fantastic guy, just an amazing guy. He's been doing radio probably 35 years and has been doing journalism for even longer than that, and is just an incredible activist and a wonderful, wonderful guy. So if you stay tuned, listen to his show. Also, to add to our interdependent media, we had a gentleman by the name of Rama come in and start up a new show today. Now, I know Rama did radio before on Gradio. He had a show called Gradio. But he and his wife have started a new show called Homebodies, which was a really cool show, and they're going to be doing some baking. Okay. This is going to be. I have to tune in next week, and if you're listening to the show, you're going to have to tune in next week too, because I've got to figure out how they do baking over the radio. Okay, Now, I can see over the TV because, you know, they show you how they're doing stuff, and there's a little pinch of this and a little pinch of that, but, you know, over the radio, it's going to be an interesting time. I hope that there's lots of crashing and banging in the kitchen and, you know, pans and pots and, you know, all that good stuff. Anyway, so Rama has had his successful debut this evening, so congratulations on that, Rama. Fantastic. If you'd like to join us while we're doing our show, you can join us in the Tom Hartman chat room. That is Tom Hartman, T-H-O-M, Hartman with two N's, T-H-O-M, Hartman with two N's, .com. Just click chat at the top of the page, and thank you, Tom, for making your chat room available to all of us wonderful progressives out here who are trying to help make a difference in the world. Also, yours truly was part of... There's a lot of announcements tonight. What is up with this? Okay, I'm just going to get this all out of the way. Okay, I know I've only got an hour, so I got to be kind of, you know... All right, let's see. Here's another announcement. Hang on. Okay, there it is. Okay. Next announcement is Fourth Estate Radio. I think what you should do after this show, not now, but after this show, I would like to recommend highly that you go to fourthestateradio.com and click on the podcast there and listen to Fourth Estate Radio. The reason why I'm asking you to do that is because it's a fantastic new show that is co-hosted by myself and John Fox out of Sydney, Australia. So it's really an interesting show. It's a really, really amazing show, and I, you know, even if I do say so myself, I was impressed even after I listened to it. I went, wow, who are those guys? Oh, wait, I know who those guys are. Anyway, fourthestateradio.com. I think I've done all of the plugs that I can think of. Let's see, besides unplugging myself. Stick around. We're going to have an interview with Sansara Taylor on this evening. Before I get too far into my broadcast this evening, though, I would like to throw out some kudos. And I'm not, you know, I don't do this very often because I'm one of those types. Now, you know, I'm a nice guy, and I don't, you know, try to lambast, you know, too many people out there besides everyone in the executive branch of government and perhaps even the legislative and judicial branches as well. But besides those people, oh yeah, and the media, God, is there anybody that I like? Okay, well, yes, there is, and I'll tell you who it is. Anyone who starts out an essay talking about Iraq saying three words, "I was wrong," has my admiration. And if you happen to read the Washington Post today, John Edwards, who the former senator from my state here in North Carolina, and also vice president, excuse me, vice presidential candidate, started out his I guess it's an editorial. You know, talking, you know, how he started out, but it was by saying, "I was wrong." This is in today's newspaper, section B07. And I'm going to read a few, you know, some parts of this because I think this is, you know, God almighty, why can't those people in Washington tell the truth? You know, John had to leave Washington to tell the truth. Anyway, he says, "I was wrong. Almost 3 years ago, we went into Iraq to remove what we were told and what many of us believed and argued was a threat to America. But in fact, we now know that Iraq did not have weapons of mass destruction when our forces invaded Iraq in 2003. The intelligence was deeply flawed and in some cases manipulated to fit a political agenda. It was a mistake to vote for this war in 2002. I take responsibility for that mistake. It has been hard to say these words because those who didn't make a mistake, the men and women of our armed forces and their families, have performed heroically and paid a dear price. The world desperately needs moral leadership from America, and the foundation for moral leadership is telling the truth. While we can't change the past, we need to accept responsibility because a key part of restoring America's moral leadership is acknowledging when we've made mistakes or been proven wrong, and showing that we have the creativity and the guts to make it right. The argument for going to war with Iraq was based on intelligence that we now know is inaccurate. The information the American people were hearing from the president and that I was being given by our intelligence community wasn't the whole story. Had I known this at the time, I never would have voted for this war. Mr. Edwards goes on to say a number of things, such as George Bush won't accept responsibility for his mistakes, which, you know, is pretty obvious. And with Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, you know, are planning to take over the world. No, he didn't say that. I say that. But he does talk about the fact that we need to give Iraq a fighting chance to create their own government and then get the hell out of there. Now, I don't know that I agree with his exit strategy. My exit strategy would be to send a bunch of planes over there, load everybody up, and say, you know, God, we're sorry. Here's a bunch of money. You know, hope you can make it right. But then again, I'm not running for any political office, so I can say pretty much whatever the hell I want. I wanted to bring that up because I think it's very courageous for someone to finally step out from the mix and say, you know what, I'm sorry. You know what, I screwed up. You know what, I was wrong. I made a bad mistake. A politician admitting a mistake. Imagine that. So you heard it here first on All Things Reco. Probably didn't hear it here first. It was probably on Rama's show tonight. He probably mentioned it, but if he didn't mention it, then I mentioned it. that John Edwards did come out and finally, you know, he said at least that he was wrong with his decision regarding the illegal occupation of Iraq. Now, let's do some spinning. I don't want to do any spinning. I've done enough spinning for the day. But what I would like to do now is talk a little bit about the intelligence, if I do have a minute. I think I do, a couple minutes anyway. If I do have a minute or two to talk about some of the intelligence failures, you know, the president, you know, has been accused recently, and was accused, I think, sometime during the last week by a number of Democratic senators about the intelligence and how flawed it was. And then the president, you know, being the wise, understanding, incredible, smart, erudite fellow that he is, stepped out Friday in front of a bunch of people and used a Veterans Day speech to basically go back on the campaign trail for saying, hey, I was right, man. Golly, can't y'all understand? That sounded more like Bill Clinton than it did. Okay, sorry. I won't do that again. But let's talk about the intelligence. First of all, Bush is saying, well, you know, everyone was given the same intelligence that I was given, okay? I do want to refute that statement, and the reason why I want to refute that statement is because it's not true, okay? Let's look at the facts. The fact is that George Bush pulled security clearances from 92 senators on October the 5th, 2001. Okay? And he says this. He says, we can't have leaks of classified information. It's not in our nation's interest. And that's President George W. Matter of fact, you know what? I'm going to do something even better than that. I'm going to pull up the exact... Let's see if I can pull up the exact... Oh, I can. No, wait, that's not it. Well, I thought I had it. I was going to pull up the exact quote from the White House website. But apparently I can't do that right in this very second. Anyway, point being is that... here we go. What he did was he pulled security clearances from 92 senators, so only 8 members of Congress, the Speaker of House, the House Minority Leader, Senate Majority Leader, and Senate Minority Leader, and the Chairman and Ranking Members of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees were given the same, were given information that he was seeing. So basically, outside of the President and Karl Rove and Scooter Libby and the Vice President and, you know, the rest of the Bush crime family, the gang up there. Besides those people, only 8 other members of the government were given access to the information, to the intelligence that drove us to war. Okay, I mean, let's be real clear about that. And the reason why that's such a big deal is because he came off saying, you know, that we were, you know, that all the this past Friday, he came off saying, you know what, we, you know, they were all given the same information that I had. Well, that's not true. That's pretty much a lie. Okay. And if you listen to Al Franken next week, he'll probably have it on his little quiz show, whatever it's called, Wait, Wait, Don't Talk to Me, or some crap like that. I can't remember the name of it. So just pay attention to that. When they say that the senators and the congressmen were given the same information, they weren't, because he restricted them from getting it. Now, talking about abuses, we're going to pull up an interview now. Boy, what a segue. With Sansara Taylor, and Sansara Taylor is with worldcantwait.org. I'm sorry, worldcantwait.net, which is the effort to drive out the Bush regime. And this interview was done this past Friday with her. So let's go ahead and pull that interview up, and we'll be back with you very shortly. Okay. I'm on the line with Sansara Taylor again. Sansara has, this is the second time in 3 weeks that she's visited our program. And Sansara is a co-initiator of World Can't Wait, which you can visit. You can find out more about them online at worldcantwait.net. And Sansara, it is wonderful to have you back with the show again. And I know that we were going to talk about sort of like an after-action report and possible future steps. Tell me what's going on. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. We had, last Wednesday, we just had a tremendous outpouring, and it was very, it's very encouraging. A lot of people came out in the streets all across the country, basically saying, okay, we're going to do this. We're taking up this effort to drive out the Bush regime, and we launched a movement in this country unlike there has ever been before, with the explicit aim of driving out a president and his administration and reversing the direction he's taking society. And I have to say, one of the highlights of the day nationwide was the high school students in particular. They're not the only ones, but they really stepped to the forefront, and thousands of them walked out in the major cities and in small towns all across the country, and probably more than 100 places around the country. They were joined by people who took off of work, by, you know, elected officials who came out in various cities, by longtime peace activists, anti-war activists, radical revolutionary types, and we received just a tremendous amount of support and statements sent in from folks like Harold Pinter, Jane Fonda, you know, Eve Ensler, Cornel West, Howard Zinn. There was just a tremendous part of what I thought was really powerful about the day, because it is a beginning. It's a solid beginning, sure. But obviously we're a long ways from what it will take to drive out Bush. But part of what I thought was so powerful is not just the numbers, although they were significant, but the spectrum of society and what that actually portends for all the different kinds of people who can be brought into this movement very rapidly. So I think we had a solid beginning. There's probably a lot more details to talk about on that, but there was a solid beginning, and now we have a lot of work to do.
Yes, we do.
So that's sort of, you know, in short how I'm seeing it.
Sure. Did you hear about any sort of repercussions that any of the students experienced as a result of walking out?
Well, there were quite a few suspensions. Here in New York City, where I am, there was about 30 students at LaGuardia High School, for instance, who got 3 days of suspension. Other students got in-school suspension. In Los Angeles in particular, there was tremendous controversy over the walkouts. And actually, before the walkouts happened, the school district there had issued a memo to all the schools saying you're not allowed to prevent students from walking out. So, you know, we had lawyers involved. We had fought to make sure that students would have, you know, the right to walk out of school. The day came, and in Los Angeles, in spite of the official memo and the official policy not to do this, they actually locked the doors on some of these schools. They did the same thing in New York City. They did the same thing in Chicago at Clemente High School. And a lot of these schools that for years they have been turning into prisons already, they literally locked the doors, and they didn't let students out. So you had, you know, partly what we saw is just a taste of the potential outpouring among young people. And then there was a threat of expulsion of one ninth grader in Los Angeles, and the school board did back down and said that they're not going to expel her. But that was something, can you imagine that, that they were considering doing? I think that's actually a chilling sign of the times, that a high school student who would say, okay, I don't want to live in a world with torture, with unjust wars, with lies, with, you know, no right to abortion. I don't want to live in this society.
Yeah, and it's my understanding that here in North Carolina, also in Raleigh, North Carolina, and I'm not sure of the name of the high school, but there was actually a high school that was placing people in detention prior to that day to keep them from conversing with each other during school hours.
Oh, yeah, there was a lot of reports of this kind of thing. Actually, we received a verbal report from somebody in the Minnesota school district who said that the governor's office had called all the principals in the state. Now, I don't have confirmation of that, but that was reported to us by somebody who works in the school, in one of the schools in Minnesota, who said, you know, from very high levels, there was systematic, preemptive threats of repercussion and repercussions. We also had students who were, you know, threatened with $300 fines for planning walkouts, for wearing the stickers that said "Resist or Die, No School" on November 2nd. And what we found, actually, and you could see some interviews on our website with some of the students who did walk out very courageously, is, you know, but in a lot of cases, that just made them more determined, because, you know, it was one thing when they were just walking out because of what the administration is doing. It's another thing when their school officials are telling them, no, you have no right to be involved in the politics and affairs of the future, when you are the future. And that really made a lot more students, I think, more outraged, and they did come out, and I think it was an incredibly powerful element of the day. And we got calls from places like Batavia, Illinois, where we had nobody organizing. We didn't know how they heard about it, how they got involved, but 60 high school students there walked out. This happened all over the country. 60 of them organized themselves. They walked out of school. They marched all through the streets of town. And, of course, it's very polarized there, like it is in many places in
sure.
Middle America and other places. They got very sharp antagonistic responses and very, very supportive responses. And then they marched down to the city hall, where they all got $25 truancy tickets for being out of school. And then, you know, an adult who was very supportive came in and paid for all of their tickets. So I think you saw this, you know, the youth really on the forefront, but other people very close behind them and together with them saying, no, this is right what they're doing, and we're joining with them. And, you know, it was definitely a big first step. We heard those stories from Batavia, from St. Helens and Washington State, from a lot of places around the country. You know, one or two students got a hold of this, and they organized, or their parents told them about it and said, okay, now you have to do something about this. So that was a very powerful element of this day.
So would you suggest that, as a part of being supportive of the students that are involved, that, you know, those of us who are older and have resources make sure that we are supportive in any sort of consequences that may result, such as truancy tickets? Or, I mean, I know that, if, for instance, here in Guilford County, in Greensboro, North Carolina, where I am based, easily half of the people that came out were high school kids who were very excited, and you know, none of them got truancy tickets. I mean, it was really kind of a very open thing. But I know that probably in the future, if the word will get through, we're going to go through the high schools any more, that would probably happen. Is there any way to fight this in a national way, or do you suggest it's sort of like, okay, pay the fine and keep going?
Well, I think that if you pull back the lens a little bit and you think about, you know, a few years ago, I was involved in the work against, you know, the Not in Our Name work against the war in Iraq before it was launched.
Sure.
And I remember high school students walking out then, and I was involved in organizing high school walkouts at the time. And in this city, you had about 2,000 high school students in New York City walk out of school. And there was talk of maybe truancy police being out. There was some controversy in the administration over whether they were going to let the students go or not. But basically, people were allowed out. They all came down to the protests, and none of the schools were locked down. here we are, you know, a couple of years further into the Bush administration, and partly I say pull back the lens because what we're seeing is a very we're moving towards fascism in this country. So I think yes, there are, you know, the schools are much more heavily locked down. Another change is that we march in this city, and I'm sure this takes place in other cities. Every march is pinned in physically by the police in a way that didn't used to happen.
Okay.
There is a massive, you know, escalation to the repercussions for people who speak out, who protest, who dissent. This is being criminalized. It's being penalized. And I think that the overall trend in society is towards making it more difficult for students and for other people to speak out. And so I think it's very important that part of building this movement to drive out the Bush regime is that we do have to defend those who come under attack for daring to step out. And that does mean helping pay truancy tickets if kids get them, but also challenging the school board if they do things like that, or the local officials. But I think that ultimately what the consequences that have been brought down on these students show is the need to drive this regime out and reverse the direction society is going. I just say, I was reading something today, and it was, I don't remember where I was reading it. It was very chilling, and it was an account of somebody who had grown up and lived through Nazi Germany.
Okay.
And part of what they said is, they said, I remember the last protest against Hitler. And it occurred to me, of course there was people, I mean, it's something that I've read a lot about lately, but of course there were people there who protested and resisted.
Sure.
But there was a point at which the last protest against Hitler took place, and when people did not have the backing and the breadth and the moral certitude and the organization to withstand and persevere. And so I do think that it is very important not just to have the backs of the individuals who come under attack for walking out on this day or the next thing that's planned, but actually to see this in an overall context towards eliminating dissent and eliminating protest and eliminating political resistance, which is what this regime is trying to do.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, we have seen so many, you know, the creation of free speech zones, which never occurred before this president, fenced in, you know, to some place. You know, there were stories of people being marched down back alleys during the Republican National Convention, you know, to end up, you know, miles away from where they were supposed to be, you know. So, but I guess I wanted to focus a little bit more on what happened on that day. Was there any major sort of did you hear of any major violence or anything that happened that could have been damaging?
Well, I know that there were instances where the police did arrest rather brutally protesters who were, and I witnessed one of these where really all they were doing is chanting with a bullhorn in the middle of the march, in the middle of, you know, the permitted area, and they were brutalized and taken into a paddy wagon. And that then up here, a woman, Juanita Young, who has been a longtime activist in the fight against police brutality, whose son, Malcolm Ferguson, was actually murdered by the police a few years ago, and has spoken out defiantly against police brutality, not just for her son, but for other victims, and against the war. She has been in, you know, the forefront of this. So she has, they then grabbed her when she verbally objected to what they were doing. They grabbed her, and she went into, asthmatic attack and ended up in the hospital. There was a heavy hand from the police towards the youth and towards the protesters. I'm not aware of anything that the protesters anywhere have done that was violent towards officers or in any other way. Our message all day long and our orientation was very clear, and this happened from what I've been able to learn in dozens and dozens of places around the country, was to call on the people who, in their millions, hate what's happening. And we went through the streets with a chant, join us, the world can't wait, drive out the Bush regime. And we did that, and we actually got people joining us. And partly our focus was not, okay, you know, we're going to go do this or that crazy thing. Our focus was, the only way you can stop this regime is by millions of people pouring out into the streets and doing so on an ever higher level, more organized and more widespread. And so that was our orientation for the day, was not an appeal to those in power and not some kind of crazy stunt or gimmick, but actually a call to the millions who can change history to come in and join us. And I think that part of what was that is a big part of what was accomplished. We did reach millions more people know about what we are attempting to do to drive this regime out,
sure.
both through the people that we reached through the streets those on that day, last Wednesday, as well as, you know, in the evening. We did make it on almost every city where we had actions. We made it on the evening news, in the nightly rotation. A lot more people heard about us that way. We were on various radio and print media as well. And really, this was a launch. And it was a call out to everybody else who is agonizing about what's happening with the Supreme Court, with the torture, with all of these things, and saying, okay. And then the other thing that we did on the day is we announced our next step, which, you know, I'd like to also talk about a little
sure,
bit.
Sure, absolutely. And we'll get there just a second.
Okay.
I guess the last thing really is just that I wanted to ask you, what were your final assessment of that day? Would you call it, on a scale of 1 to 10, how successful?
Well, I would say probably a 7.
Okay.
Because I think it was very solid. It was very, you know, we were aiming to begin something, and it was not something we thought we were going to force Bush out on November 2nd, but we aimed to begin something, and I think we did that very solidly, both with the outpourings and with the spectrum and the different parts of society coming together who don't usually come together. If you think about it, a Nobel laureate like Harold Pinter together with the, you know, with the high school students whose schools are more prisons than places of learning, and everybody in between. We sort of knit together an unusual alliance in society, which is very important. On the other hand, you know, there are, I think, a lot more people we could have reached and need to reach, and that we're not. We get a solid beginning, but this regime is very deadly serious. And when I make the comparisons to what, you know, lessons to draw from Nazi Germany and what it would have taken to stop them there, I think that's what we're facing, at
okay.
least as severely. And I think it's going to take an incredible lot more than we have. And it wasn't the case that we exceeded our expectations or went beyond, you know, oh my God, now it's all downhill from here. So I wouldn't put us at a 10,
okay.
7 or 8, something like that. We're solidly in it, but we got a lot of work to do.
Okay. All right. I'm on the line with Sansara Taylor. Sansara is a co-initiator of World Can't Wait. You can reach them online, worldcantwait.net. And we're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back.
You are listening to All Things Reconsidered, the weekly radio program that brings you alternative perspectives on the events of the day.
Okay, we're back with Sansara Taylor of World Can't Wait. And Sansara, we had talked, you know, in the first half of the interview, we talked about some of the accomplishments in sort of an after-action report of November the 2nd. What can we expect, or what's the plan for the future now?
Well, our next big step is during Bush's State of the Union address. And this is the, you know, if people remember back in 2003, this was his big chance where he made his case for the war in Iraq and, you know, greased his way to war with lies and misinformation and manipulation. And this year, when he gets before the country and he gets before the world and he goes to announce his plans and his rationale for another year of his criminal regime and everything that they're trying to do, we want the world to hear, not his voice, not his plans, not his posturing as the morally superior, you know, George Bush with the country united behind him. That's not what we want the world to hear.
Sure.
Our plan, and we're working very hard on this, is to have his voice politically drowned out by thousands of people, tens of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people is our aim, who are in the streets en masse with the single demand, Bush, step down and take your whole program with you. And we want his voice drowned out, and we want the world to see, no, he does not represent us. And not only are we complaining about it and saying, oh, we don't like what you're doing, there's actually a force that's organized, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands nationwide, who have the explicit demand, the concrete demand that he step down. And this is gonna put a fundamental challenge to the guy's legitimacy. And that's different. You know, a lot of us don't think he's legitimate now. But what we're talking about is in the eyes of millions and millions of people, delegitimizing this president and actually forcing a question for him and those, you know, around him. Are you gonna be able to continue to assert your program? Are you gonna be able to continue to hold on to the reins of power, which you should not be? And they're not legitimately, you know, in power with this political force pouring into the streets and calling you out this way. So this is a major escalation. It's a concrete step, and it's one that is relying on our strength, which is the fact that we can tell the truth about what he's doing. We don't have to lie. And that we have millions of people that we speak for, and we need to bring them into the streets with us. And those are the two things that we're really hinging this on: the reality of the situation, the truth about what's going on, and the millions and millions of people who, for whom the world that Bush is trying to create is going to be a nightmare, and really galvanizing all of them and asserting them on one day nationwide and really drowning out politically what Bush has to say on that day. That's our next step.
That's a fantastic way to do it. Now, is this going to be something that is going to be more in localized areas, just like this was, just like November 2nd, or are we going to have like a large focal march in Washington?
Well, this is a good question, and it's the question that we're going to take up. We're having a national organizers meeting in New York City next week, where we're bringing in the hundreds of people who were at the core of organizing for November 2nd to get together, and we're going to have a meeting of the minds and a strategy session, because we don't have a lot of time between now and the State of the Union, and we don't have a lot of time given the pace of the Bush regime's advance. So we are pulling people together to strategize what's the best way to take this next step. We have not yet decided if it will be decentralized nationwide, or if it'll be a convergence in D.C., or if there's some kind of combination of the two. We do intend to reach out ever more deeply into every corner of society, whether that means doing local actions or one national action. We do want to bring forward a lot of people who have, up to this point, not seen themselves in the protest movement, not seen themselves as an activist, not seen themselves as an organizer, but who are going to be given a challenge and an invitation to be a part of making history.
Okay. So, tell me about this organizers' conference. What kinds of activities do you have planned, or what's that going to look like?
Well, we are, it's going to be here in New York City, and we are going to bring people, like I said, from all over the country, some of whom have a lot of activist experience, some of whom have very little, but all of whom are recognizing the severe danger that we're confronting, and we're going to really strategize on, you know, how do you best utilize 2 months national ad campaigns, major fundraising. We need hundreds of thousands of dollars, and we are not, you know, we're not a major institution. We don't have corporate backers. We don't have much funding at all. It's all coming from people who are taking this upon themselves to organize and throw in with. So we have major fundraising plans to do, which will help staff and office do mailings and place ads, which we want to do major print media, with the call, which you can find at worldcantwait.net,
okay.
That explains what we're doing and why. We want this to be put in the New York Times. We want it to be put in other major weeklies and national papers, and again, to hit the airwaves.
Sure.
We also are going to have strategizing sessions for student and youth organizing, because the students have been majorly out on the forefront of this, and so we want to figure out both how do we take that further and how do they get involved in reaching out to other sections of society. Have crews of high school students who risked a lot to come out go and put a challenge to some people who, you know, maybe have a little more, a little less risk to step out, you know.
Sure.
People who've been part of, you know, professionals and other sections of society. How do you mix that up and get a good chemistry going? Also, the local organizing chapters will meet, because I know a lot of people are out in, like, you know, we have a chapter in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. They're taking this up and they're running with it, and they're going to be able to sit down in a room with the people from Tulsa and the people from L.A. and strategize on what's working where and how do we go further. And then one, I believe we're going to have at some point a panel discussion of some of the different key organizers, because part of what's great about what we're doing is we have people with tremendously divergent viewpoints. I myself am a revolutionary communist. I'm one of the people who initiated this. I write for Revolution newspaper. So I have, like, you know, I don't just want to get rid of the Bush regime. I want to get rid of the whole setup of capitalism ultimately, right?
Okay.
So I'm, you know, that's one perspective. We have people who are involved who voted for Bush. They don't really want a revolution. They want to get rid of Bush. They've recognize that they're being lied to by him. They have a different perspective. They'd like to go back to what they think is a better, you know, the way that even the Republicans used to be. And then you have everything in between, from traditional Democrats to, you know, people who are figuring it out. So we want to have a discussion where people actually get to air different perspectives, where we're coming from, and religious people too, and why we all, from our different perspectives, are taking up this campaign, but also learning more from each other in the process. So that's one of the things that is, as a core of this movement, we want to facilitate that kind of discussion and debate as we go forward shoulder to shoulder to drive out this Bush regime, or none of the futures that we'd like to live in stand a chance, is one of the things. So,
so this
that's
is
sort of our plan. We mm-hmm. have about 2 days of conferencing and meeting to do, and then immediately hit the ground running with our working groups cohered and our plans for, you know, our timeline. For how do you use 2 months when half of them are holidays, and how do you make history very, very rapidly? So that's what we plan to do.
Lots of fundraising. How successful was the advertising campaign leading up to November the 2nd? I know this is maybe a part of the after action report, but I think that it's important to sort of tie in your future needs with what was successful leading up to that day. So how successful was the advertising campaign?
Well, I think that what we did, just so your listeners know, is we placed ads on Air America, audio PSAs, and they were done by Boots Riley from The Coup, Jessica Blank, who wrote The Exonerated, the play The Exonerated. I'm trying to think. Suher Hamad, who was a poet in Deaf Poetry Jams on Broadway.
Okay.
I'm forgetting somebody. Koba, a hip-hop performer here in New York. There were several different people who did these ads. And we put on Air America, saturated the airwaves for about a week and a half. And I think this did actually, first of all, it doubled the number of places that we're organizing for the World Can't Wait for November 2nd. Because a lot of people are out there and they're looking for a vehicle to act, and they didn't know that they had one. So this reached a lot of people we would never have reached otherwise, and I think it was very important in that way, in terms of core organizers. It also was the case that hearing it over and over again, and this is part of what we're trying to do, is not just let people know this is happening, but actually get the word of what we're doing out so much that people, it has an effect of actually struggling with people and giving them heart and saying, okay, maybe it is worth throwing in. There really is some momentum to this thing. And so we
sure.
wanted people to hear it, not just once or twice, but saturate the airwaves. And I think it did have a big impact on the level of turnout.
Okay.
In various places.
So okay. So what?
And towards the end, we were able to raise enough money to place ads also on some of the urban radio stations in
cool.
Los Angeles, and I know that had a tremendous galvanizing effect. A lot of the high school students were organizing, but when they heard it on the airwaves, it shifted the mood among not just the core who was already active, but among the people that they were going out to. And so I think And we tried to do that in New York, and Hot 97 banned our ads here in New York. So
yeah, I read that.
Struggle over that as well. But I think that they did have a big impact, and that, you know, that it's part of why we did it is because we're convinced, and I think we were proven right, that there are a lot of people who do not usually find themselves at a protest who right now are looking for a way to act that will have an impact, and we need to reach them. And that means going well beyond what we can do just hand-to-hand. We did distribute 3,000 copies of our call hand-to-hand with people. I mean, 3 million copies of our call hand-to-hand just with our organizers. But there's something different. When you hear it on the airwaves, it's really happening.
Makes
and when
it
you
real.
Hear it every day,
sure.
You know, you reach millions of people you never would have before. And I think that there are those people who are out there not traditionally organized who are ready to be so and who need to be so right now, and that was our aim, and I think it did have an impact, but there's yet a lot more to be done.
Sure. Do you have any fundraising goals, and if you do have any fundraising goals, do you have any deadlines for those goals?
No, I think that's something that's going to be hammered out, but I would say that at least we want to raise at least $1 million very quickly, and part of our goal, and I mean very quickly, like in the next 3 weeks or so, whether that be all raised or some of it loaned, but immediately get some money so that we can... there's an irony involved. Once you have a certain amount of money to operate with, it's easier to raise money.
Sure.
So we need some seed money, and
sure.
that's something that I know that some of the crew in the World Can't Wait offices are trying to strategize on right now.
Okay. Is there a way that any of my listeners can go ahead and make a donation to you right now?
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
If you go to worldcantwait.net,
uh-huh.
There is a button on the left column that says donate. You click that, go there, and give as much as you can.
Okay.
But also, you know, give as much as you can and also encourage others to do so, because this is a place that if you give money, it's not going anywhere but to drive out this regime and to reach the ears and the hearts of millions of people who we need to reach to be involved in that. We don't have a big bureaucracy that's sucking up half of your funds. When you donate to this, it's going to really strengthen this effort.
That's fantastic. Real quick, we have a couple minutes left. Any inspirational words? I know that the last time that you were on, some of the comments I received from your visit with us were that you were incredibly inspirational. So I for one am grateful to have you on. But any words of inspiration for those who are listening who are involved in the campaign right now?
Well, one thing I don't know if this is inspiration, but I would say it's clarifying, because I got, and I'm sure some of your listeners did, or most of your listeners got these emails 2 days ago, from different groups. Move On was one of them. Other groups sent these emails too, saying, oh, we got this great victory in the election.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because some Democrats were voted in.
Yeah.
And I have to talk about this because it was so frustrating to me. One of the things, I'll try to do this briefly.
Sure.
In Virginia, Democratic Governor Kane, this was supposed to be one of the big victories. But then when you look into it, this is not a victory against the theocratic direction that this country is being pulled in. This was called a victory because the Democrats decided that they were going to become more like the Republicans that we all hate. The guy who won campaigned. He put ads on saying that he was a Christian missionary to Honduras and that he believes in a culture of life. His religion teaches him the sanctity of life. He did all of these things. And I actually think that this is one of the dangers that's going to be with us the whole way through. Over and over again, there's a temptation to say, okay, now Bush is really in trouble. Now we can relax. Okay, now the Republicans are really in trouble. Their popularity is dipping. They're getting in trouble. But you know what? People said the same thing about Terry Schiavo, and then Bush comes back, and he handpicks, you know, Roberts for the Supreme Court. They said the same thing after Myers got pulled, and then he picks Alito. You know, and I guess I just want to reiterate that what it says in our call, people who steal elections and believe they're on a mission from God will not go without a fight. And the truth is that, you know, that this so-called victory in Virginia and some of these other places, it's not a victory. It doesn't mean that we don't have to fight. It's actually further proof of why we have to get out of that dynamic where the whole terms of what's electable and what's acceptable keeps getting further and further pushed to the right. And that the Democrats can become more like the Republicans that we all hate is not a victory. It's more proof why we need to be in a movement to struggle to drive this regime out and to reverse the whole direction that they're taking society, and that that's only going to come from us from the bottom up. And so I urge everybody to get involved. Come to our website, worldcantwait.net. We're going to have a big impact when we drown Bush out. But we really do. We have a huge foundation that we have seized, just a broad spectrum of society, of prominent voices, of average people, of the courageous and audaciousness of the youth. We have a great beginning, but it really, you know, it's sort of like the Rosa Parks moment. A handful sat down in the way of injustice. Now you either have a bunch of people flood in behind them and back that demand up,
mm-hmm.
or you end up in a worse place than when you started. And I think we're poised to go somewhere very, very, very much what the world needs and drive this regime out. And I urge everybody to throw in with this, because it can make a world of difference.
And it already has made a world of difference. And Sansara, thank you so much for joining us on All Things Reconsidered once again. And, you know, we're going to keep tabs with you as this goes forward. You're a wonderful guest, and you're doing wonderful work and very necessary work. So I applaud you for everything that you're doing.
Thank you, Bruce. It's good to talk to you.
And we'll be right back. Thanks for visiting with us, and we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. This is All Things Reconsidered. You can visit Sansara's organization, worldcantwait.net, and if you have spare change, by all means, give a donation. They need every penny they can get.
What is the Fourth Estate? The Fourth Estate used to be...
Here is a bulletin from CBS News. In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting. More details just arrived.
And today, what are we force-fed?
Because Fox is where the news is.
You know, in the old days, it wasn't about the exclusive. It was about telling the truth. It was about making sure the truth was portrayed in the media, you know, in print and in television and on the radio. And now the news has become a manufactured item. Today news that today's media is complicit. What we want to do, and what we're going to do, and what we are doing with the Fourth Estate is to create a place, well, if you will, a safe haven for the truth.
Fourth Estate Radio. It's again time to hold them accountable.
For the latest details, visit fourthestateradio.com.
That's fourthestateradio.com. All right, this is Bruce, and I'm back in front of the stainless steel microphone that I'm staring at. And that interview with Sansara Taylor was recorded this past Friday. For those of you who have walked in late to the show, Sansara is a co-initiator of World Can't Wait, a nationwide movement to drive out the Bush regime, and they have a daunting task ahead of them, but seem to have some organizational stuff going on. There's going to be an organizational meeting this next week. Excuse me, next weekend, starting next Saturday at Columbia University Law School, starting I think at 9 a.m. So if you are in the New York area and you want to go check that out, or if you're just wanting to go and check it out anyway, please do so. You are listening to All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch. I'm your host. You can reach us online, allthingsconsidered.org. Every week we meet here for a dose of sanity in the middle of a sea of insanity, iniquity, and other stuff that's, you know, just too damned unmentionable dimension. Too damned unmentionable dimension. But I do want to get this one little bitty news story in before we shoot out the door and on into Peter Werby's show. And that is just an interesting little tidbit from across the Atlantic. And this is the headline. Blair faces new inquiry into Iraq war. Impeachment campaigners claim former ministers will join 200 supporters to force a Commons probe. And this is out of the Sunday Herald. MPs organizing the campaign to impeach Tony Blair believe they have enough support to force a highly damaging Commons investigation into the Prime Minister's pre-war conduct. A renewed attempt to impeach Blair over claims he misled Parliament in making his case for war against Iraq will be made in the Commons within the next 2 weeks. The impeachment process effectively stalled last year when just 23 MPs signed a Commons motion, but the scale of the government's defeat on its anti-terror legislation last week, where 49 Labour MPs rebelled, has galvanized the momentum for proceedings to be invoked. Organizers say they are expecting 200 cross-party signatures, including those of former government ministers, to force the Commons to set up a Privy Council investigation. That word just threw me off. That would examine in detail the case for impeachment against Blair. And, you know, I have a friend over in, we all know, or some of us know, a lady named Sue, who is from the UK. I'm going to have to ask her what a Privy Council investigation, I mean, do they meet in the Privy? Or do they, or is it a council, you know, okay. But this is good news, and the reason why this is good news is because truth always has a way of coming to light. And ladies and gentlemen, I must say that I hope, you know, I have a lot of hope that with that announcement that the truth is coming to light in England, and with a little bit of work here, we can also make it happen. So if you get a chance, speak out against the Bush regime. Stand your ground. Dissent is patriotic. Always remember that. Dissent is patriotic. And we're hammering up right up at the top side of the hour. Got to tell you, it's been a the hour always goes too short for All Things Reconsidered. One of these days we might expand into a whole hour and 10-minute show. Maybe, maybe not. Only when Peter Warby's not on the air. So, let's just do this instead. Meet us here next week. Same time, same ATR channel. Remember, 4th Estate next Saturday, 10 o'clock p.m. 4thestateradio.com also. Drop an email to Ben Birch at White Rose Society and say thanks for archiving the show. And you know what? Thank you, Tom Hartman, wherever you are, for letting us use your chat room. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I will gavel this one to a close. This has been Bruce Birch with All Things Reconsidered. You can reach us online at allthingsreconsidered.org.